about the different cultures that impact our communities. We've brought in another one of the KHOI volunteers. Yuri is here. She's a reporter. She's a volunteer. She's a host. She's really one who had the idea for this show. So, Yuri, could you introduce yourself?
Yes, my name is Yuri Hagachurya. I have been here in Ames since 2000. 1990 is when I came to America. I was born and brought up in India, Assam. Spend wherever he goes, I seem to follow him. So I ended up here because he teaches at Iowa State University. When I got married in 1983, my husband was already a student in Ontario, Canada. I did my master's there, and then after finishing that, my husband again decided to go to England. So he worked in Norwich, England. I started doing my PhD program there, and I had my first daughter. And then again, my husband decided he wants to go to America for a new job. So I followed him. In 1990, June, we came to Ardmore, Oklahoma. Since 1990, we have been here, and I think we are here to stay.
So, Yuri, how do you feel about living in Ames?
I am home. I cannot go back. I'm here, and this is my home. I just want to give as much as I can as gratitude to the community for making me feel at home. I'm home.
During this hour, we're going to hear from a number of perspectives of the international community's impact on our area, including James Dorsett, who's the director of the International Students and Scholars Program at Iowa State, who will be talking about the impact of the international students on Iowa State throughout history as well as currently. Yuri, some of the other interviews we're going to have.
Yes, we are going to interview some people who has made the life of international students coming into Ames much, much easier. One or such organization is Friends of International Women, Andrea Hill and Barbara Guiseda. We'll talk to them. And then there is another lady from Nepal. She will tell us about her experience and how she feels about Ames. And her name is Sanjit Mishra. So we have a really lot of information here.
We'll also have a little bit more about Yuri's personal experience, as well as some music from around the world.
Second one is that everybody smiles. Oh, what a friendly place. Everybody smiles and says hello when you get out of your door. But then my second impression was that, okay, the big is still staying there, but the smiles are just, after that, it's very difficult to get to really know people. And you were just smiling is there, but then to become a friend, you have to really go out and make an effort. And while we are in Ardmore, there were two organizations. One is just like the Octagon Center of Arts here. Mm-hmm. There is a Goddard Arts Center in Ardmore, Oklahoma. And there are a group of people trying to make the city better and bigger. And they actually hold a little evening for welcoming new people to the city. So I went there and I was amazed at how much these people are working to make us feel good. And then similarly, my husband's institute also holds twice a year some mm-hmm. functions. So I thought that, well, these people are working. So now it is my turn to letting them get to know me better. I needed friends because I really believe that after saying that no man is an island. Mm-hmm. So I felt like I am not an island. I need others. So
So you identified a community outreach program that not only offered contact, but offered some context and some training, some teaching that was important to you and your children.
Yes, definitely. That's how it was happening. Mm-hmm. And so what I did to get really involved with the community is that I applied for a grant $5,000, and then I got the grant to bring the international flair to the community. So I involved the schools and involved the art centers, and we had a two-day program, started doing that. So that we could do that for 3 years continuously until I was there. And now I think they're carrying it on in a very smaller scale. There was just one institute there, not as big as Iowa State, where few people come. But here in Ames, the difference is Iowa State University is a much bigger establishment. And so there are a lot of lots and lots more international people from all over. The Ames community in 2000, when I came here, was already there are established organizations like FACES, and the university itself produces some. Mm-hmm. And then there is the Friends of International Women.
You came to Ames after 10 years at Ardmore. Did you find it easier because of your previous experience to find contacts, to get out into the community, to relate to the community, than you did when you were in Ardmore?
When I came here, I saw that there are already establishments, everything is there, so I didn't feel like the community really needed me. And so I just sat back a little bit, and then I just did my job and my children, I just concentrated on that. So, and then I started feeling really lonely about it, because I want to be part of the community. Yes, mm-hmm. I had the Indian Cultural Association and an Indian community with me, but that was not enough for me, because I want the local, born and brought up Ames community. So it took me a while to just find something else that I can really start, I can do, or I can be part of. Now I started getting involved with Friends of International Women, and from there things started sprouting up. And I'm here with two remarkable ladies, Andrea Hill and Barbara Guiasta. They are two tireless community workers of Ames, Iowa. Barbara has been recently awarded YWCA Woman of the Year for 2012. So let's hear what Barbara and Andrea has to say about one of the community organizations in Ames. It's called Friends of International Women, in short, FIW. When did this organization first start?
It was 1971. Friends of Foreign Wives was started. It actually was a collaboration of volunteers and community activists, and originally started with organizations connected, or people, or connected with the YWCA, the Church Women United, and the International Student Office at ISU. There was a need in the community because we had all these international students here at ISU that brought their families, and many times the women that came with their husbands had limited English skills, and coming to a totally different culture, there was seemed to be a need for education. So it was basically adjusting to life in the United States.
Originally, the organization began as one group meeting all together. The organizers for it at that time was Friends of Foreign Wives, actually solicited the help of churches within the community to host the international women. And at these meetings, they would have these programs, the helping people learn English or cooking classes, or even classes about the medical services within Ames. That was the whole system was different than what the women were used to in their countries.
So you have you both been involved from the beginning, Barbara?
No, I think I became involved around 1999 when I started working at the international office. And when my husband was an exchange professor in Glasgow University in Scotland, they had an international women's group there. So mm-hmm. it gave me an insight even to another type of international mm-hmm. women's mm-hmm. group.
Well, for me, my husband and I moved to Iowa in the mid-'80s. And I got a job at the public library. And I noticed that there were some posters, I think, up about this group. And I went to a couple of different meetings. At that time, they were more in the educational focus. I can't remember exactly what the program was, but they had childcare, and the women stayed in the group, and we had some kind of, it was like a movie or a film strip or something like that. Mm-hmm. And just this great big group of international women and all these children. Mm-hmm. And for me, coming to Iowa and, you know, just being new myself and then seeing all these international faces and seeing how, even how they parented different, I was just intrigued. It was like, wow, there's a whole world out here of people to get to know.
I understand that there are actually two different sessions, right? One for one afternoon session and then one evening session, a group. That is, I think, wonderful that that facilitates the people who work can come in the evening and people who are with children who cannot come in the evening because they need to get the children to bed, they can come in the afternoon, which is really nice. So has it been like that from the beginning?
So it all started out as just one large meeting. This all sort of changed when a law went into effect that mandated that everybody be restrained by seatbelts or car seats. Mm. Up to this point, the volunteers would transport the women and their children to these meetings. And so you can imagine these cars were just piled with women and children. Yeah. And now this could no longer be legal to do this. Yeah. And that's how the small groups developed.
You know, there's not always been just two groups, kind of the structure that we have now. There were lots of different meetings. People would go and maybe just get into conversation groups at different homes or churches still. The focus of the meetings changed. Now there was more availability of international food, so maybe mm-hmm. cooking American style wasn't something that the women needed to know. Clothing became cheaper, mm-hmm. so sewing your own clothing, which was something they used mm-hmm. to teach, was no longer a part of what we did then either. Yeah. And there were fewer volunteers because more women were going into the workforce mm-hmm. here in the community. And then we found, too, that more of the international women were going to take classes themselves. So there's been a lot of changes throughout mm-hmm. the years mm-hmm. according to the needs of the people and just kind of our circumstances of how the society has changed, too.
Yeah, that's so nice that it is flexible and it's kind of moving with the surrounding, with the community and that with the society's changes.
Exactly.
Exactly. That's mm-hmm. really nice. Can you describe what do you do in the meeting?
The evening group tends to be a little bit more social. I think many of the women have their husbands take care of the children and it's their night out. Mm-hmm. They like to have the opportunity for adult conversation. Mm-hmm. They also enjoy meeting women from other countries. Mm-hmm. Sometimes our meetings have been culture nights. There might be women who want to do an evening to educate and tell other women about their country through food, through clothing, through maybe some activities.
Because I remember I went to one of the evening meetings, and there, I think, Ukraine.
The Russian was, Ukraine.
Yeah,
yes, I remember.
They were doing the dresses and the food mm-hmm. and some pictures, and it was really awesome.
Yeah. So if it isn't social, it will take mm-hmm. on some sort mm-hmm. of a theme. Mm-hmm. One of our more recent meetings, a woman from Nigeria showed much of the clothing and how she wraps the headdresses. And that was very interesting. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, but I know the afternoon group has
right. So Barbara, you then are kind of, so to speak, in charge of the evening group.
I'm the coordinator for
coordinator of the evening group.
Right.
And Andrea, you are the coordinator of the afternoon group,
afternoon
right?
Group. Yep.
So as Barbara said, it's a little bit different, maybe, and
Yeah, I think a different feel, because like what we were just talking mm-hmm. about, the availability of people that, or the women that are able mm-hmm. to come in the afternoon, mm-hmm. they're probably not working. Sometimes they do have children that they bring. The afternoon group, we usually have topics. One of our latest topics that we were talking about was just a general one called beauty. And what are the beauty standards across, you know, our different countries? And are we talking about physical beauty and what constitutes internal beauty and things that you can see but also that you can feel? And the conversation just kind of goes in all different directions, maybe not anything that you had originally thought, but it just goes and it opens and people share. You just don't know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So it's a beautiful thing to see it unfold.
Yeah. Do you see that people actually make friendships, that knowing people, and then...
Most definitely. And I think that they do tend to make friendships. Let's see, it's not because they're lacking anything, but because they're willing to make these connections.
Yes.
But we've done a couple of different things. We've gone strawberry picking to a farm here near Ames. We've gone shopping. I mean, sometimes mm-hmm. that's something mm-hmm. that was unusual. I did notice that some people don't have cars, and mm-hmm. so in Ames, we have a wonderful bus system, and you can get around. Mm-hmm. But if you want to go exploring a little bit, we've been able to attend performances thanks to
the Defense Auditorium, the ISU program.
Yes, and we have worked with Sarah Compton, who is the outreach coordinator for ISU Center. And through grant writing, she has been able to get money to offer tickets not only to Friends of International Women, but to other groups in town. Because these tickets are quite expensive, many of our members certainly could not afford to go to these performances. So it has opened up opportunities for them.
That's like exposing them to the culture, right? Mm-hmm. I presume that people from all over the world meet people from.
We've got Nepal, India, Japan, China, Taiwan, Sri Lanka, and then Mexico. Mm-hmm. So this year, that's what it is, but who knows what it'll turn out to be next year.
It's like connection, right?
Exactly.
I've never met anybody until a couple of years ago from Macedonia. We've had people from Albania, from Slovakia. Our women from Slovakia tended to be associated with Sauer Danfoss. So our members, and we really enjoy getting members outside the university community. And I think that's one of the things we have to emphasize. We're not just strictly a university community mm-hmm. organization. Mm-hmm. We are for the whole community.
It's not just for the ISU women.
Yeah. There's all ages, too.
Yes.
And we certainly welcome young women mm-hmm. because so many of our members mm-hmm. are young women.
Are you as enthusiastic as you were in the beginning?
Yes, definitely. Yes. Being with the women and doing the activities that we do is so inspiring.
Yeah. Barbara, what about you?
Whenever I become sort of overwhelmed or thinking, I've served my time, so to speak, something will happen that will rejuvenate me. Mm-hmm. I mean, we'll have a picnic and a husband will come up to me or to Andrea and say, oh, we are so glad. I'm so glad my wife found this group.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one husband saying, I'm really glad my wife found the group because I don't have the time to spend with her. I am a student pursuing a PhD, and I am doing my research, and it is so nice she has a group of women to socialize mm-hmm. with.
Any of you, either of you, wore a sari?
I got to try one, We had a party.
Yeah.
Well, that was a great night, or the afternoon. And yes, the women wrapped me up in a sari, and we did some dancing, and it was just, it was delightful.
Yeah. Were you any different before you met all these people from different parts of the country up close? I asked that because I was personally told by a lady that, you know, we were in England, and that lady, when we met her here, she said, you know, if I met you in England, I would have not looked at you twice. Now I'm just the same. I said, yeah, we are all the same. Everybody's same. So you see that up close.
It just broadens your viewpoint of things. Mm-hmm. As Andrea was talking about her program on beauty, one time we had a meeting where we got into talking about childbirth and what was the hospitals like, what was the care like. Mm-hmm. Just the very basic things in life you realize there's so much you don't know about it, but we share a commonality.
My husband studied a lot too, and I was left alone, and I know those times of being lonely. I think just that motivation to help someone come along, join the group, come with us and enjoy life again. You don't have to just wait around in your apartment waiting for your husband to come home for that meal that you've prepared, so it's like come join life again with us and share, because we're all sharing together. I think that everyone that comes doesn't seem to have any preconceived idea. They're just open to the sharing part of it.
Oh, definitely, yeah. I think about the fact that I was in a country where I spoke the language. We were in Scotland. And I think about the women here. I have a great deal of admiration for international women who do not, English is not their first language. They are willing to go out in public. They are willing to do things. And they're learning the language. I'm in awe of them sometimes. Mm-hmm.
The times that you can see someone just blossom before your eyes,
yes.
If they come in and they're very intimidated by their lack of what they think is their lack of English skills, but then they practice a little bit, they have encouragement from the women that are there, they get to speak with other native speakers, and then they just take off from there. And wow, this is wonderful.
Yeah, you see the benefit of it right then and there, and that is just awesome,
That's the advantage of the small groups. The women don't get lost in that group, and they feel they get to know the people, so they're not embarrassed in front of them. They're willing to ask questions. They're willing to share their lives. They're with people they feel they know.
Do you want to say something about FIW or anything related to it?
If you know someone, or if you are someone who would like to join something like this where you can make friends, and really we say that we're building world relations one friendship at a time, because that's really what you're doing. And you can, you too can be a part of this growth, this friendship. And then if you know someone who's needing some encouragement or would really like to get involved with the group, then you just need to know about us.
If anybody listening to us here now want to get involved,
we have a website, and our website is aimsfiw.org. That's aimsfiw.org.
We can put people on the invitation list. So if you're listening and you want to be just, finding out more about what's going to be happening at our next meeting and where we're meeting, that's a good way to go about it. And
evening group and afternoon group also do some things together, like the summer picnic.
We also have a potluck to start the spring semester, kind of our own little New Year's Eve party, you might say.
Okay.
But usually, just before classes start in January, we have a potluck over at the SUV Community Center. And then
it seems like it's all about making a home away from home.
That's exactly what we're trying for this group.
Yeah, this is really, really wonderful. Thank you very much, Andrea, Miss Andrea Hill, and Miss Barbara Guyesta. Natalia Ragavska, Assistant Scientist in the Agronomy Department at Iowa State University. I met Natalia at the Friends for International Women's Evening Meeting. Welcome, Natalia.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. And you can hear from my accent, I'm not exactly was born here in the United States. I was born in Ukraine, in western part of Ukraine, and that's where I came from 13 years ago. Ukraine was part of Soviet Union for a long time, and actually a few days ago it celebrated its 21st Independence Day.
Congratulations.
And, thank you.
So what brought you here, and when did you come exactly to the United States?
We came here with my husband in 1999. The reason we came here is then former major professor invited Peter, my husband, to come here to pursue his PhD studies. We've been married that time, so I kind of joined him and came along. The first year I was working as a lab technician and did some laboratory work, but then a year later, my professor also offered me opportunity to get my MS and then PhD here at Iowa State.
So you must have seen a lot of change in Ames,
yeah,
right?
Ames is really growing, especially the last few years. It's expanded quite a bit.
More assimilation opportunities, right? And then be actually part of the culture here. And that is what the organization that we met, who are Friends of International Women, that organization helps a lot.
And it's hard for me to remember exact time of when I was introduced to this organization. It was probably within the first couple of years when I heard about it.
How did it help you?
The real value is that it gives opportunity, first of all, to meet new people, but also it gives us opportunity to learn about culture of different countries. And, of course, probably the best part that we have the opportunity to taste the food from different countries of the women who host those meetings at their house. So overall, it's a good opportunity for me to sometimes to participate.
Mm-hmm, that's good. Do you have your own organization?
We do have an official, what we call Ukrainian Club, where we have about 10, 15, maybe 20 families that do come. We come together about 3 or 4 times a year to celebrate big celebrations. So we do have some Ukrainian community.
So when you get together, do you play Ukrainian music and dance and dance?
Sometimes, yeah. We can do that too. But most often it's just, you know, to socialize and,
Make a home for you in Ames. And does Ames feel like a home city now?
Yes, actually it does. Partly because, you know, we've been here for 13 years. And our children were born here too. You know, we left our own country when we were, you know, relatively young. And we could adjust to different culture and to different country much easier. And especially because Ames is such a welcoming city in terms of there are a lot of other international people here. So we don't really feel like that we don't belong here.
Yes, that's something very special about Ames, isn't it? It makes you feel like you belong here.
Yes.
So Natalia, what language do you speak with your husband at home most of the time?
We speak Ukrainian language.
You know, I have never heard anybody speaking Ukrainian language. Can you say something in Ukrainian?
Sure. Я дуже рада бути з вами сьогодні. Which means that I'm very glad to be here with you today.
I hope we'll see you again. Thanks. And I sure hope to bring some Ukrainian music to local Ames people.
Oh, sounds good.
I have here with me now Sanju Timilsina from Nepal, a beautiful country at the foothills of the mighty Himalayas, China to the north and India to the south, east and west. Sanju came to Ames in 2010 and she says she absolutely loves Ames. So Sanju, welcome. We're really happy to have you here. But first of all, tell me why you absolutely love Ames.
Oh, thank you, Zuri. Thanks for inviting me. Ames is a nice place to live in. Basically, it has a nice community. It's safe and it feels like a home. It has nice people, helpful people, and the place where I live, actually my apartment is really near to the marketplace, so it's in a walking distance, so I really like that.
So you think everything is very accessible here?
Yeah definitely. Yeah. It's
so you say that it feels like home. So home is where in Nepal?
Oh, my home?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's in the... My home is in the capital city of Nepal. It's Kathmandu.
Mm-hmm.
It's a valley. That means surrounded by the mountains. It's a small city, but it's a very beautiful city. And in Kathmandu, my home is in the center part. It's in the one of the center city part of Kathmandu.
So being in, Kathmandu being the capital city, do you get a lot of traffic from the tourists that goes to scale the Himalayas?
Definitely.
The Mount Everest?
I mean, tourism is one of the most flourished thing in Nepal. I mean, every year lots of tourists all around the world come to Nepal just to see its beauty. And whoever comes to Nepal, they have to be in Kathmandu first, because Nepal has only one international airport, and it is in Kathmandu.
I see.
So it's no way you can just jump and go other cities by skipping Kathmandu.
Right, yeah,
so
you will
have to be in Kathmandu first.
Yeah, I actually growing up, when I was in college, I met some Nepalese friends I had. And I always loved the music, and so this is today. I thought that okay, we should share some Nepalese music. So, who do you have a favorite musician or a singer?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's not only my favorite. He's the legend of Nepalese music industry. He is Mr. Naren Gopal. He is not anymore in this world, but his songs and the music given by him, it's still alive in every Nepalese people's heart.
Okay, so let's hear a song from
by him?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay, ladies and gentlemen,
Naren Gopal.
next guest today is James Dorsett, the director of the International Students and Scholars Office at Iowa State University. Tell us what it is you do with the International Students and Scholars.
Well, our goal is to be kind of the open door for the students after they arrive on campus. Once they come to Iowa State, we have a roughly a week-long orientation with them and to kind of help them get oriented to the university and learn kind of the basic key facts that they need to know and get their ID cards and all that fun stuff. And then as they get into their classes, they need to get a job on campus. If they have to travel and get a new visa, all those fun things that are vitally of importance to international students, but most people don't really think about.
Can you give an example of somebody that you would have been providing services for?
They could have been at a college fair that one of our recruiters was at.
In their country.
We have alumni groups in various countries. But a lot of this is either word of mouth, they have a relative, they have a friend, someone who's gone here, or they're working with what are called agents who work with students and their families to help them find a good fit. And a lot of students come to Iowa State because it's relatively well known in the sciences and food science and those areas. It's pretty safe and it's seen as a welcoming environment. And so they would apply to the university. Maybe they might get to the U.S. Embassy and the consular official may say, well, you're going over there to study business or genetics. There's a good school right down the road here in this country. Why aren't you studying there? So you don't really need to go to Iowa State. And they may deny them the visa. At that point, we might need to get in contact with the consulate and show them that we have a whole number of students who have come here and successfully completed and done well and gone back. Or let's say the student successfully gets here and they have some issue with their paperwork. If you've ever done any international travel and you're flying back to the U.S. and you'll have the people from the airlines walking around with these long white cards, and those are cards that international folks will have to complete. And the U.S., the way we do our dates is different from the rest of the world, and they may put it in the way they do it in their country and it might not be the right way. I had a case with Brazilians just last week who have a very long last name. It might be three or four words together, and they'll only put their first one down. And your passport and this I-94 and your other documents, they all have to match, because as we know in this country, if students have to show their documents to police or to officials and they don't all look the same, then there might be some question. And so we have to help them intercede with them with some immigration folks in Des Moines to get those things worked out.
And then how long would somebody like this normally stay?
If a person is here for an undergraduate degree, they would usually have 4 to 5 years. PhD programs usually 5 to 6. If they needed to stay longer, we can help them with that. We have students who they get here and they have financial issues. There can be a revolution in their country. There could be a natural disaster. The earthquakes in China, the tsunami a few years ago in Malaysia, the other tsunami in Japan can wipe out a family's financial support. And so the student will not have the funds to be able to continue. So we try to work with the university or with maybe outside agencies to try to get them funding to help them to be able to continue their studies here.
When did Iowa State really get involved in bringing international students into their core of targeted students to bring to the university?
Well, the first international student on campus was in 1878, which wasn't terribly long after the university
started.
Didn't
wait long to start bringing him in, huh?
That's true. Slowly, from that point onward, the numbers grew, but it wasn't until 1954 that the office that I now am a part of was actually created. So
why did the first student come?
There were, from what I've been able to tell, it's very similar that happens today. People know someone who is here, and so this student was related to someone who was already here and they had an opportunity, and so they came to Iowa State. Basically, over the years, we have seen our international population grow, although we didn't start recruiting officially until 1989. So until that time, it was students just applied to Iowa State, didn't make any strong efforts to go out and find them. But now we have two full-time recruiters who go around the world and go to college fairs and high schools and other universities to get international students to Iowa State. And right now, they represent about 12.5% of the student population. We, according to our count from last fall, the numbers we had were 3,442, and we had a very good incoming class this year. Mm-hmm. We could well have another record year. We've had 3 years of record enrollments for international students. In 2010 through 11, international students contributed over $20 billion to the U.S. economy. In Iowa, they contributed $280 million, and for ISU alone, $83 million. And that's after you take out their assistantships and everything. So that's substantial contribution to the economy that people are probably not really thinking about.
And those numbers don't include visiting faculty?
We probably have another 600 to 700. We call them international scholars. They mm-hmm. are here to either teach or do research or get some sort of training. Some of them are postdocs from other universities. So, yeah, so if you add them all together, we have about 4,000 visitors.
And why does Iowa State recruit?
Well, for a variety of reasons, especially in some of the majors in the sciences, it's very helpful to have students from other countries because in chemistry and biology and some of those majors, there's not really that many American students who are filling those positions. So they need the students, plus also a fair number of those students feel research roles as graduate students.
Then another population that's not included in that is the permanent faculty and staff members who come to Ames that are international residents.
That's
and
true.
Take a permanent residency.
Our office also processes that paperwork. If the university wants them to be here permanently, they process the permanent residency application.
Right.